And you're very welcome back to Greystones Golf Club. We're here until 8 o'clock. We're going to change tack slightly for the next few minutes. Alan Colley, Conor Mortimer are with me. Before we get into the galas, Alan, these rumours that Christian Benteke perhaps signing for Liverpool, a bit of cold water on that from Brendan Rodgers today, though.
Yeah, it would seem, from what we were reading in the paper all over the weekend, Hugh, it almost looked like a done deal. We're talking $32 million. And as far as I could see, like after reading the papers yesterday and the speculation around it all weekend, it was almost done. But they're obviously out on tour at the moment in Australia, and Rodgers was asked after the match by an Australian reporter, and he basically shut her off. Like, and she was kind of thinking, "Oh, typical manager speak." That obviously the T's are not crossed, the I's are not dotted yet. But he said, "I literally don't know what you're talking about," when she asked him about Benteke. So, from going from one point of view where we thought, "Yeah, it's a done deal," after listening to that today, it would seem as though. Go on, Gary.
You're watching the golf here, Gar.
Yeah, Zach Johnson's in big trouble on 17. He's going to have to come over the road hole bunker. So,
When we thought it was over.
Maybe you're
hang on to my West Hayes and docket. Don't be ripping it up yet. We got just a quick mention about the FAI AGM. There's not a lot to say because as we thought, nobody got to ask any questions, or at least they weren't answered if they were. But interesting comment that the FAI and the members there say that John Delaney is the best signing that they've ever made. Is that in the context of, say, someone like Jack Charlton or any of the other great managers that we've had over the years?
The person who actually said it, they were naming out players, former great players.
And John Delaney is the best signing.
So out of players, managers, that... And I know the man very well who said this, and he's involved with soccer a very long time in Sligo, does a good job in fairness at the Sligo Leitrim kind of end of things, but he's part of the delegates that have been around for the last God knows how many years, and it's no coincidence that he got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and then obviously in a speech afterwards he said that, so good luck to him.
Good luck to him. What happened to Sligo Gaelic football team, Alan? Your tip for the weekend.
It was more me heart ruling my head now. Give me some credit.
Your heart is in your trousers.
It was actually embarrassing, to be honest. I watched it yesterday, I tuned in, and
it was over after 10 minutes.
What I couldn't believe was, right, looking at it, because we all know about the golfing class in all the provinces bar Ulster. So obviously in Munster you have Kerry and Cork, in Leinster here we have Dublin, and of course in Connacht, Mayo dictate everything. And the manager said after the match, just what I couldn't understand, he basically said, we knew about the golfing class, the golfing class is massive. So how he could actually line up the way he did and take them on 15-15 with a bunch of young lads, a lot of the Sligo lads are, and the lad who was marking Aidan O'Shea, it was his second ever competitive championship game. It was absolutely beyond belief what was going on.
Conor, naive at best from John Carew and Sligo, what were they doing? Got a microphone there for Conor. Use that one there. Nice one.
I mean, to play 15 on 15 and not put men behind the ball. I mean, it was clearly a misjudgment from.
That's
from
what Mayo love. They love teams that tell them and say, right, we'll go around you, we'll go past you, we'll use our pace, use the wing backs.
The better footballers will tend to win in the end when that occurs, you know. I think it was the first time that Mayo actually went at it straight away from the start. They wouldn't be known as going for the juggler straight away in games. They tend to build into games.
Well, maybe they have a point to prove under this new management system. Maybe it actually people, including yourself, weren't overly convinced by what we've seen so far, albeit just one game against Galway.
They played very well yesterday. No, there hasn't been much of a challenge. Sligo were just so poor yesterday. I mean, they looked like a bunch of under 16 players playing yesterday. Mayo won't have learned a huge amount, but what they will have learned is obviously they've probably two, like O'Shea and O'Connor now, they have two kind of marquee forwards, top players.
How do you deal with Aidan O'Shea in that full force now? He's almost unmarkable, as one of the lads was saying to me today.
Well, one-on-one. I mean, he's physically very strong. He's got a great pair of hands. I mean, if you leave one-on-one, I mean,
he'll destroy
you. You have no choice. You have no hope.
The point, Hugh. Experienced players would struggle, wouldn't it, Conor, to mark him?
They would.
They played a kid there. Like, I know, disrespect to the young lad, and I felt sorry for the young lads because I think the manager, the way he set them up, let them down, really.
I mean, the way they played, there was naivety from the players as well. I mean, management fine, but I mean, the players in the field, I mean, standing behind Aidan O'Shea, I mean, he's as wide as he is tall. You're not going to get around
him. He's a beast of our
ball. But saying that, the way it looks going forward, if Donegal can beat Galway in the qualifier of the next game, then it'll be Mayo and Donegal. And that space afforded to Mayo yesterday will not be there against Donegal.
Here, Gary, I was thinking of Killian O'Connor, right, and Aidan O'Shea, this target. Now, everybody knows now what he can do. And as you say, he's wider than Kieran Donaghy, right? He's just so strong on the ball. It takes two or three guys every time. Killian O'Connor is going to have a field day. Let him loose.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to go near him now. They're all going to be worried about Aidan O'Shea and this guy. Pick it up. Yeah. They're their marquee forward, if you like.
Well, yeah. It was funny. I remember Ken Cunningham talking about Messi. He can't be in a situation as a defender and have a one-to-one with Messi. I was like that with Aidan O'Shea. So it was just crazy.
Yeah, no,
but he'll get all the hype now. And as you say, the lads will be giving up the scraps.
But I read Joe Brawley's article over the weekend, and he was basically saying Mayo need to get almost like the way Donaghy and James O'Donoghue were last year, a big target man, and to build up this relationship, flicking it off to O'Donoghue. And it's probably the first time, is it, Connor, we've seen O'Shea and Killian O'Connor kind of linking up like that.
Yeah, playing inside. I mean, they scored quite heavily yesterday, but I think the only worrying stats that came out of it, I mean, they've conceded two more goals again. They're conceding goals in every game, and that goes back to last year as well. Like 2-11 for a team in a Connacht final or any championship game, it would be enough. But it's generally worth winning a game, 2-11.
Like, what do you think
points.
In terms of like the question that's been asked of what have Mayo actually gotten anything out of it yesterday?
Five in a row for them, by the way.
I suppose they have a couple of new players. I think they, you know, Gerald O'Connor played at wing forward. Sean Parsons back in the middle of the field. You know, it's gelling them into the team now. They have another Connacht championship for a lot of them. I think Alan Dillon, it's number 8. Andy Moran is up there as well with number 8.
Great servants to the game, then, boys.
Absolutely.
Here's one thing I took from the game, right? Mm-hmm. And tell me I'm wrong here. Donegal have to go and play Galway now, right? Yeah. And you look at the Galway performance against Mayo, where they put Mayo to the pin on their collar, really. They only just got over the line in the end. I think 3 or 4 points there was in the margin. But actually, that form guide against this Mayo team doesn't stand up as too bad at all. And Donegal expected to take care of Monaghan, and they couldn't do it. They have to go and play Galway now, and you'd worry for them.
I don't know if I'd worry now. But
I would.
I don't know if I'd worry for them, but... It won't be a walkover by any stretch.
No,
I was at the Donegal game at the weekend, and I know obviously Monaghan won it and they deserve to win it. But I mean, Donegal's second half, I think they're 10 wides in the second half alone. And what surprised me, it wasn't the fact they were kicking wides being marked by people. They had space when they were actually kicking the shots, and there was just so many just poor efforts. You know, as I said on Friday night on the show, Michael Murphy was injured all week. McBrearty was injured all week. Like, Murphy was anonymous yesterday due to injury. You know, the fact that he came through a tough Ulster final, you know, he'll be okay probably for the Galway game and that. And
should they have started him? I mean, does that expose Donegal's panel a little bit, that maybe they're actually just a little bit too reliant on those lads?
Well, if he wasn't fit, he wouldn't have played, I suppose. You know, I think even having him on the field is you're a lot weaker if you don't even have him beside you on the field. You know, they were let down by 4 or 5 players yesterday didn't play. The players that would be big names, like McAneilish, didn't play well yesterday. I think Lacey might have taken an injury, came off midway through the second half.
The other side of that then, Connor, with Murphy, what I found yesterday, Hugh, he's their talisman, as we know, and everyone looks at him. As Connor said, just to have him on the pitch, people think, well, he's with us.
Yeah.
But then when you're looking yesterday and he's giving the ball away the way he was and he's having no influence, when people are looking for, like, our main man, where is he? And even he's like, kind of nowhere to be seen. Then they're all a bit like, oh, where do we turn to next?
And he didn't take the final shot as well at the end when they had a chance to equalise.
He was carrying through. He was carrying his knee throughout the game. You could see that. Now, he put in a couple of big, big hits through the game. He hit Darren Hughes with a belt. It was like a bus coming on top of you. He knocked him down.
Connor McManus is worth a mention.
Okay, because
brilliant.
This is the criticism that has been levelled at Monaghan, that they're too reliant on him, that they're too reliant on one or two players. They stood up yesterday in the Ulster final, and they were counted on, and you know, they fully deserved the victory.
They played well. They used their tactic very well yesterday. I mean, they didn't. Donegal had men behind the ball yesterday, and Monaghan didn't let the ball go long at all. They carried the ball up. The likes of McManus, Kieran Hughes, Darren Hughes, coming off breaking ball inside and coming off the runners. You know, it took Manzi probably 20 minutes to get his first ball in the game. And the first ball he got, he put over the bar. And you could see his confidence in the crowd got going. Any shot he got after that, he put it over the bar. And you know, when you score your first one well, everything that he hit after that was going over the bar. You know, it was a huge effort from Monaghan after last year, after him beating as well. And you know, it was the first time I was the guy that was sitting me, or Frankie Dolan from Roscommon actually. You know, I just said, do you think there's an All-Ireland in Monaghan after the way they played yesterday? You know, they looked confident, they looked strong. And
what did he say?
There's a chance.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, because none of the teams have been overly impressive here.
No.
Yeah, but then if Donegal had 10 wides against them, you can hardly
That's the other side of it.
That's the thing. I mean, no, the reaction and consensus that I've taken from the game yesterday is that Donegal underperformed as much as Monaghan played reasonably well. So, you know, if you put those two ingredients together, you'd have to, I don't know, are they value for Northern Ireland yet? I'd actually make the point that the most impressive side for me so far has been Mayo would be up there. No, and then you throw in Kerry as well in the performance against Cork on Saturday night.
No, they are, like, to be tagged now as...
But you just said Mayo against Galway wasn't overly great.
No, I in terms of Galway's performance, that
they
didn't get as much credit
bad.
As
they're
they did
bad,
for yeah. running Mayo as close as they did.
Last year in the semi-final against Kerry, it was Aidan O'Shea's concussion that lost that match for them.
Yeah, they should have beaten Kerry last year.
You know, so if he's fit and strong...
He looks even fitter this year.
On the flip side, if he's taken out of the game, they'll struggle. So, he scored 3-4 yesterday out of their total.
So even going back to Hugh's point of Monaghan being over-reliant on McManus, are Mayo very over-reliant on O'Shea?
I don't know if they'd be over-reliant, but they've no big man inside to win balls.
Yeah.
You know, their forwards tend to be generally small, strong.
Will this be a problem? There's one as well. Will this be a problem, Hugh, for Dublin going forward? Because Curry have the big man, small man. Mayo have the big man, small man thing. Donegal have it with Murphy and McBrearty. Dublin don't if they are packed against blanket defence and just launching balls.
That's the biggest single factor against Dublin for the All-Ireland this year. And they are so short with the bookies again. But they have proven, and even a team like Westmeath, who just tried it on a flip of a coin to turn themselves into a defensive team, and Dublin struggled for large portions to break them down. So they come up against the Monaghan, they come up against the Donegal, even at Tyrone, whatever way the draw works out. And you'd have to question whether Dublin have still the necessary skills and know-how to get past that blanket defence.
Time will tell with Dublin. You know, I think the important thing, I suppose, Dublin, and a lot like Mayo as well, They're not fond of playing defensive systems. And now we've seen the last 3 or 4 years, the All-Ireland winner has played defensively and won the All-Ireland. Now Mayo haven't done it ever, haven't won All-Ireland since 51. Dublin didn't have to do it when they won the last two they've won. And Donegal have done it, and Kerry did it last year. So if Mayo don't change their defensive, play one or two back and perfect that role, It makes it a little bit tougher for them to go on a winner.
Okay, let's go over to St Andrews now, because we have the next hole down, the third of four, the 17th is finished, and Greg Allen and Gary Moran are standing by. Gentlemen, what can you tell us?
Well, the third of the playoff holes was the 17th, and you know, you do get this situation on 17 where a bogey and a par is probably the best you're going to hope for. In the case of Zach Johnson, he's just made one of the best bogeys of his life, and in the case of Louis Westhuizen, he's just made one of the worst bogeys of his life, but they both walked off with bogeys. Just to sum up what that means, it means that Zach Johnson takes a lead down the last of one stroke over Louis Westhuizen, and effectively Mark Leishman is out of the running now in this playoff. It's down to the these two, and with the one-stroke lead, Zach Johnson has had a good drive down the last. Of course, it's a wide-open fairway, and now we have Louis Westhuizen on the tee, and he's only a 348-yard hole, so this should be a straightforward drive and a pitch for both of these players, and it's down to one of them making birdie and one of them making par, possibly. In the case of the Louis Westhuizen, he needs to make birdie, and Zach Johnson, if he makes birdie, that'll probably be it. And Louis Westhuizen has hit a huge drive, and he's actually only got about 40 to 45 yards, but he has to come through the valley of sin. Will he play a low one? Will he play a high one? That's the difficulty for Louis Westhuizen, but he has hit a perfect drive in the situation where he certainly can make birdie. So Westhuizen needs birdie, and Zach Johnson, if he makes birdie, will probably do enough. But the critical situation on 17 was Zach Johnson left himself the road hole bunker to pitch over, and he pitched it over the back of the green, left himself in a gnarly lie and rough, but he got up and down. And Louis Westhuizen found the front of the green in two, but three putted. So they both walked off with the same score, which leaves the situation Zach Johnson one ahead of Westhuizen. And just one question I'd really like to ask Gary Murphy there, and it's to do with the prospect of will Paul Dunne turn pro or not. And Gary, do you think that having gone through what he's gone through this week, that the Walker Cup could be any more of a rush than this week? And is it worth waiting for the Walker Cup to turn pro?
No, I don't think it is. I think if he gets in the Walker Cup team and they win it, his sole focus is to be a professional at the end of the year. I think he will undoubtedly have an opportunity to play at minimum 5 or 6 events before Tour School to possibly earn his card. And if I were advising him, that would be my advice to him, to turn pro this week and just get on with it.
I can jump in there for a second, because Padraig Harrington was asked that after the interview that I played some of there with him. He was asked the same question, and his advice to Paul Dunn was to play in the Walker Cup, that he could spend the rest of his life being a pro. So I do understand there are certain events he'll get into and maybe earn his card over the rest of this season, perhaps. And then, as opposed to playing Walker Cup and probably getting into second stage of Q School and having to go through that, and I mean, you're kind of coming down to one tournament there. So advice from Gary Murphy on the one hand and Padraig Harrington on the other, and who knows what decision Paul Dunn will come to. I suppose he'd be like Shane Lowry, he'd probably make some kind of announcement within the next week or so, a bit like Shane Lowry did after he won the Irish Open in 09.
Yeah, Shane Lowry made an announcement 4 days after winning the Irish Open that he was going to turn pro. That's the next question, I think, over the next few days that Paul Dunn will have to consider. It's certainly, I'd say he's certainly have a few companies knocking on his door and management companies at that, telling him, come on, Paul, you know, you're hot right now, turn pro right now, and this is the time, and you'll have events that you get invitations into between now and the end of the year, and it's a ripe time to turn pro. Whereas you said, Gary, earlier, after the Walker Cup, there aren't that many options, really, not many tournaments to get invitations to.
We were in Slieve Russell a few weeks back, and we had a situation. Leona Maguire just missed out on winning a professional event as an amateur, and you spoke to her dad, we spoke to Leona, and the sense was very much that she wanted to turn professional and strike while the iron's hot. Sometimes in life, you know, a door opens for you unexpectedly. Paul put himself into this position. It didn't work out quite how he wanted, but, you know, as we see with pros, it's all about experience, you know, and if he had had more experience today in those kind of situations, maybe it would have worked out differently. Why not get as much experience as a professional between now and Q School, and then maybe that might stand to him in what is a grueling slog to get his card?
Yeah, well, the reality for Paul Dunn today, the only difference, finishing 30th and finishing second are exactly the same. Make no, absolutely no difference to him. A silver medal is, okay, it's great. Who won the silver medal in 1995 when Tiger Woods and Gordon Sherry played in the Open? Steve Webster.
I knew that.
So a lot of people don't, but silver medals are great. But Paul wants to be a professional golfer. He's got an opportunity, because he's good enough. He could go for 5-6 starts and get his money up and have to avoid going to second stage of tour school, going to first stage. Like, it's 14 rounds to get through to get your card. Plus, it might be that good a card, whereas if he plays well in 6 or 7 events and finishes in the top 110 or even top 150 and gets a conditional status for next year, it's far more than what he would have just going into that lottery. I mean, it's 14 rounds, it's 1,100 people for 20 spots. It's not really easy.
What would you do, Alan?
I know you're saying there to you, it hasn't really worked out. I think it's probably been the best weekend of his life. This has made him, this weekend.
Mm.
Like, let's be honest, was he really going to win it today? We don't know, but he put himself in an unbelievable position. But in terms of his profile now, he's absolutely massive. As Gary said, he's put himself in a position now where he has this decision to make probably tomorrow or later in the week, whether he is going to go professional. And had he not done as well this weekend as he has done, maybe that opportunity wouldn't arise so quickly.
Well, it's a belief system. I mean, if he doesn't, he has to have the belief now that he's able to go and do it. He will never, ever in his lifetime probably again be more nervous on a golf course than he was today, because he's been there and he's gone through it. So,
if you were the chief executive of Under Armour, would you be knocking Paul down and writing him a big fat check and saying sign up? They've got more exposure, I think, from him in the last few days than Jordan Spieth.
Well, I probably wouldn't be letting him slumming around an airport tonight and waiting to fly home. I'd stick him on the jet and let him go home with them. So,
yeah,
you know, phenomenal. They reckon, I think his exposure was 1.7 million they got in, it would have cost him TV revenue this weekend for him. And, you know, it's just a great story. And it's, you know, he's not on his own, Paul Dunn. There's a lot of other good, really good Irish amateurs who get inspired again by this, and they've been doing it week after week this summer, and it's just brilliant.
Okay, I want to touch on Cork against Kerry before we leave this one. Kerry getting the job done at the second time of asking, a lot more convincing. Tomás O'Shea said he would have been preparing for war if he was in that Kerry 15. It looked like that's how they faced into that game. They took apart Alan O'Connor. He didn't dominate to the same extent. What do you think?
No, I mean, look, you get one chance against Kerry. If you don't take it, generally you won't get another chance. I just think it was, you know, it might sound unfair on Cork, but it was typical Cork. They blew up again. They tend to do it. If they go out and play, they can either play brilliantly or play poorly, and generally when they don't play poorly, they tend to get turned over by comfortably enough. And Kerry played well. You know, they had a couple of big performances as well. Now, I seen on the Sunday game, Martin Carney gave James O'Donoghue man of the match.
How did that happen? What match was he watching?
His man, I think, would have been man of the match, in fairness. The guy who was marking him, Cork cornerback, the Lavery guy from the North.
Yeah.
Played pretty well. they had good performance all over, but you know, James O'Donoghue wasn't the best player on the field.
Kerry fans demand that the team compete every single year, no matter whether they're coming off the back of an Ireland or not. We know how difficult it is to do it, but they have that strength in squad. You see the likes of Paul Galvin coming off the bench. Now Gooch can't get in the team. Darren O'Sullivan, all these names, you know, in that Kerry squad. And I question maybe the likes of Monaghan, who might be too reliant on guys, or Donegal equally as well, if Michael Murphy isn't firing. That Kerry squad is seriously impressive.
No, I'd say they have a big squad this year. You know, they have a lot of boys back fit again. You know, I think the most, you know, interesting thing, the fact they asked Galvin to come back, you know, Fitzmaurice wouldn't, as you can see with Colm Cooper not playing him, they're not going to ask a 35-year-old to come back if he doesn't see a role for him in the team.
Yeah.
And I think Kerry of all the teams left are probably in the best position. Croke Park is there. It's like their back garden, Croke Park, and that's where they're going to be. They're going to be next week.
Louis Westhuizen has just hit a pretty nice second shot into 18. Gary?
Yeah, he's got a chance. It was a shot behind. He needs to make birdie, but I don't think your money's too safe, you.
Really?
I think it's Zach Johnson's Open Championship, which is if he does go on to win it. I mean, all the talk about, you know, Dustin Johnson and the power game, and you have to be a bomber to do well around St Andrews, and it would be an astonishing achievement for Zach Johnson were he to win. Plus, he played the John Deere last week as well.
Yeah, preparation. But Jordan Spieth, let's talk about him as well, because he's obviously not going to take McIlroy's place at the top of the golf professional standings, but not this week, and he showed real grit today because he wasn't playing his best golf. You could see he was frustrated, yet he was only one shot away from making this playoff.
Yeah, and he had a 4-putt on 8, which kind of we thought knocked him out of the tournament, because in relation to Paul Dunne as well, you know, the back nine was probably playing 2-3 over par, so it was very demanding, very hard to pick up those shots, but he bounced back with birdies in 9 and 10, and he just keeps on giving, Jordan Spieth. I mean, his putt on 16, you know, he has that X factor, and you know, even out of the Valley of Sin on 18, he was just a whisker away from forcing a playoff, and astonishing.
He's
talent.
The best around at the minute, is he?
Well, he is, because
he's not better than McIlroy.
No, but
he is, because Rory's injured.
No, but the fact that even if he was playing, Spieth is playing better golf, is he?
Yeah, well, you'd have to say that.
He's the form player.
That's
true,
mate.
Yeah.
At this moment in time, like, he nearly, look how close he was to winning his third major in a row. Yeah.
Okay, let's go back over to St Andrews. Greg Allen is standing by. You can take us home, Greg.
Well, we have a marking point situation here on the 18th. You know, I'm not sure Zach Johnson has called in a referee. What this is about, do you know? It's very difficult to tell what the conversation is about on the 18th. But certainly, Zach Johnson is consulting with a referee. I'm bemused as to what this is about. They're staring at a point on the green right in front of Zach Johnson's ball. Doesn't seem to be any issue because Zach Johnson is lining up the putt. He has a putt of around 18 feet, 15 to 18 feet from above the hole, which means that he's putting down towards the Valley of Sin, almost in the same position that Jack Nicklaus had in the playoff against Doug Sanders in 1970. Now, anybody remembers that, because it's one of those putts which is replayed and replayed and replayed, and after which Jack Nicklaus threw his putter up in the air and it came down on the green without him catching it. It's a piece of repaired ground which they're a bit concerned about, or Zach Johnson is a bit concerned about, and he's been allowed to tap it down. It's clearly the difference between a ball mark and spike marks. So he's been allowed to tap it down under the rules of golf. He's been given the all clear to do so, to repair the ground between him and the hole. So it's around 18 feet. It is, as we know from the putt that Jack Nicklaus held all those years ago to win the playoff against Doug Sanders, a left-to-right putt, maybe 3-4 inches outside left. And Zach Johnson will give this due care and attention, because this is the putt that will win the Open Championship, should he hole it. If he doesn't hole it, then Louis Westhuizen will have a putt to more than likely send it to an extra tie hole. And Zach Johnson has, obviously, as Gary Murphy said, blown away any notion that St. Andrews is a bomber's course, because he is the direct opposite of a bomber. He is a relatively short hitter. He stands over this putt, 18 feet, 15 feet, and it's going to the right and it's going to miss. He didn't allow enough break. It was around 4 inches of break. He allowed for 2. So he'll tap in for a par, which means that Louis Westhuizen, from around 10 feet, will have a chance to send it to an extra hole, but he will have to hold this putt. It's at least 10 feet, closer to 12 feet, possibly. So, Johnson finishes with a par, and that means he's one under par for the four holes of the playoff. He birdied the first two, bogeyed the third, parred the fourth, and that means he's one under par. Louis Westhuizen, with three holes played, is level par for those three holes, and Mark Leishman is not a factor anymore. He's two over par, so he's out of the playoff. No matter what happens, he is out of the playoff. If it goes to extra holes, this putt, around 12 feet, it's certainly, by the looks of things, more than 10 feet, maybe four paces, so that will give it 12 feet. A birdie putt for Louis Westhuizen, the champion in St. Andrews back in 2010, has a chance to send this playoff to a fifth tie hole. And as he lines it up, it too looks like it may have a little bit of left to right on it. And this 18th green, this famous old 18th green, right in the town of St. Andrews, the 18th green is right on the street. An extraordinary location. Westhuizen pulls back the putter, and it's gone left, and it's missed, and the champion, the Claret Jug, will go to Zach Johnson in what's been a somewhat anticlimactic playoff, because clearly the smile on his face broke very, very slowly and very, very late after he saw Louis Westhuizen miss that putt, and the champion is Zach Johnson.
Super stuff, Greg. Thanks so much for that. My thanks to Alan, to Gary, and to Connor. Zach Johnson, the Open champion for 2015, and what has been an incredible weekend for Irish amateur Paul Dunne. We're here in Greystone's Golf Club. My thanks to everybody here. The good news, Danny Hatton's put a round of drinks behind the bar. And my thanks for all your support here.